Welcome to Rankin on Bass, an offhand joke that became a long-running podcast. I'm your host, Mike White. Joining me is an ape who's secretly a mother, Chris Dashew.
I, too, have what my wife so lovingly coined terracotta face. The terracotta-faced apes. My orange face, white body. With my long arms that hang to the ground as I walk around the forest being harassed by a child-murdering Jack Palance.
Also along for the ride is great white hunter Richard Haddam.
I didn't kill the alligator. I killed the boy.
Jesus Christ. Ladies and gentlemen, I saw Jaws one too many times.
On this podcast, we discuss the works of Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass, specifically some of their stop motion and animated work. But in this case, again, we're diving into the live action well, and we are talking about one of the last movies that they produced. This one, The Ivory Ape from 1980. We got the gang all here. We've got Tom Cattani is directing. William Overgaard and Arthur Rankin Jr. are writing. We've got Maury Laws doing the music, of course. We've got Bernard Hoffner also with him. We've got just the whole regular crew.
And Benny Corzine.
And we have the return of Stephen Keats of The Last Dinosaur fame. Here he is, the improbably named Baxter Mapes, kind of playing almost the same character, really.
You say?
Yeah, this is kind of a retread of The Last Dinosaur.
This movie is a retread. Are you talking about his character or the movie?
I started with character and then I branched out into movie.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, Richard Boone, much more present than Jack Palance.
Yeah, this is like, you know, how you go to a restaurant and it's like, oh, this is a smoked or something. They waved Jack Palance over this movie. It's scented with like, look, you know how LaCroix is with like the cherries, like cherry was waved over. The Jack Palance is like three scenes. It's a shame because the reason I was excited for this movie, almost singularly, other than the name being the Ivory Ape, was Jack Palance. His leathery face, that is.
6 inches forward, 5 inches back. It was an ivory ape.
That's true.
Hey, guys, can I get a word in?
Oh, here he comes.
Sorry, here it is.
Oof. Oh, oof. Man. Oof.
Coming in, sizzling.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I feel friggin' muzzled on this podcast.
Yep.
Oh, boy. All right. If you want to bring it,
let's bring it up.
Got the microphone here.
I'm just saying that some listeners have reached out. And apparently some of them feel that somehow I'm not talking enough or I'm struggling to be heard. my facile remarks breaking through the intelligent discourse of the two of you. I don't know what exactly was said here, Mike.
We are steamrolling you, sir.
We still have no proof that this is not actually just Richard messaging Mike from a burner account. But again, my perception of all of this is that Richard, I don't think you don't talk enough. I've never gotten that perception. Honestly, if I do
no
think
one
about
has
it,
ever
like
gotten that feeling.
We have podcasts where it's you and I talking for 2.5 hours.
So yeah. You agree with our listener who says that we're steamrolling Richard, that we need to give him a little bit of a break.
I don't know. If I think about it on this show, no, I don't think so. Do you, Mike? Do you really think we don't let Richard talk enough?
I don't know. Is he fighting for air?
I find it. Look, to the listener, we love it when you guys get in touch. We love reading the reviews. It was pretty hilarious when Mike sent me this one like screen grab of this comment, because I'm like, my thought was, and by the way, it wasn't me. If it was going to be me, it would have been 3 years ago. Okay? I'm going to wait that long for a joke. But I'm like, oh, this has to be sarcastic.
Right. That was your first response immediately was, this is sarcasm, right?
Right. It's like, oh, anyone who thinks I'm not getting enough airtime, they've got to be, as the British say, taking the piss.
Right. That's what I was convinced of. Because again, like when I've had you on other shows, it's never been like, oh, Richard is not able to exert himself in the conversation. Like, you are not one of those people. It's very strange.
That's not one of the things that typically comes up when people know me, that I'm not talking enough.
Soft-spoken Richard Haddam.
Delicate flower.
a true man among men.
Mike, did you check it out? It sounds like you had had a back and forth with.
Oh yeah, this is actually a friend of mine who said this.
So. Oh, so you know who this is?
Oh yeah, yeah. This is famed director Alvin Akarma.
Alvin Akarma.
Yes, who directed one of my favorite movies in the world, Lethal Force. So he usually is pretty good. So that's why I was serious when I sent it to you guys in the group text to be like,
man,
are we actually doing this? Are we over talking, Richard? Because I would feel terrible if I was.
Mike, I feel like you should have led with, I know who this is, because this would have affected my opinion a little bit, because not to say that I don't think someone who would reach out to the podcast doesn't know what they're talking about. But I will say maybe their expectations are a little different on one end of the spectrum versus our end of the spectrum. The creation of the product versus what product ends up on the other side. Do you know what I mean? Look,
hey, now that I know this guy is a, you know, well-respected, clearly intelligent, a man of letters, now I couldn't agree more.
There you go.
Richard.
So we need to back off of Richard. Give him a little bit more of the spotlight here.
All right. Thank you. Now, when it comes to the Ivory Ape, I got nothing to say.
I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming.
You don't want to talk about Gorilla Dick? I mean, that's one of the very first scenes in the movie is talking about Gorilla Dick when we've got...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When we've got
the truth comes out.
I got excited. No, you were describing something, please.
Well, I was just saying, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but one of the very first conversations in the movie between Stephen Keats and I'm trying to figure out, I guess it was Trisha Sambera, who is only in two things, including this one, Vida Havemeyer is her name. She's the woman who is dubbed the entire way through, much to my distraction, because every time she speaks, it is a different person's voice coming out of her mouth. And she is really giving him a hard time about how can he tell the difference between the male gorillas and the female gorillas, and really just basically like, oh, is that the only difference? Like, basically, tell me about some hot gorilla dick, please.
Yeah, that character was pretty much just sexual energy. That's it.
But what's hilarious is that this whole movie then hinges on Gorilla Dick. Like in the very end of it, we learn, spoilers, we learn that the Ivory Ape is actually a female ape. It was there the whole time from the very first conversation.
A female ape protecting her young. What a surprise. Yeah. What a surprise that the humans are baddies. Once again, it's the peeps. Are we the baddies? Again, humanity once again reinforces that we are sacks of shit and can do no wrong in murdering poor animals. I mean, yeah, they kill people, but you know, hey, nature, you know, nature does what nature does. Nature's metal is fun.
Well, I don't know about you, Chris, but I have a t-shirt that says the most dangerous animal is man.
It's true. Most dangerous game of all is man.
Look, you know, I'm typically extremely patient and I don't want to say patient and indulgent, but I will with some of these live action Rankin and Bass projects. And I can usually find something to enjoy one way or the other. And I did find some things here, but I gotta tell you, I mean, it's not that the movie is bad. It's just that it's like vastly under budgeted. Not particularly well thought out. The acting is, I think, could be generously described as unhinged.
Oh boy.
And And it has literally no redeeming qualities whatsoever. But besides that, it's not bad.
I mean, the true opening of the movie, this movie opens in Africa after we get the amazing Hush Little Baby Don't You Cry theme song, which is not quite the banger that The Last Dinosaur is, which I can still get stuck in my head if I think about it. Oh, yeah. But the acting of these people that are in, quote, Africa, unquote, who are speaking perfect English, even though they're like way deep in the bush. Oh my God. There are several times where the acting in this movie is just amazingly bad. And just what are you doing? Like, how could you even let that take go? That's how bad this is at times. I had the best time watching this movie, not as much as I did with The Last Dinosaur, but I was having a pretty good rip-roaring time, especially being a fan of Jaws and just watching this movie follow those Jaws beats.
There was a moment where it occurred to me that they only filmed the rehearsals and then cut, because you have Stephen Keats, who, by the way, I bizarrely really enjoy.
You mentioned that last time when we talked Last Dinosaur.
I am fascinated by his acting style. Actually, I think his performance in Last Dinosaur was I don't know, it's hard to say better, but it was sort of like more coherent.
Way better. Yeah.
Here, it's like, I'm still enjoying watching him, but I'm like, wow, I don't know what's happening. Is he like, is he on cocaine, or did he just receive some really great news before every single take? You know, when they say it looks like they had fun filming it, it looks like he had a lot of fun filming this movie, but to the point of like no one spoke to him and said, do you just want to kind of bring it in a little? You know, you're like bouncing off the walls. He and one of the characters, I think it was the one you were just talking about, the woman whose voice was dubbed
Fida. Yeah.
As they're walking away, you could hear him going, we're strolling as they're walking away from the camera. And I'm like, what is happening? Did you know he was being filmed?
Right.
No. Oh, like you said, they only filmed the rehearsals.
I don't know. It was, I mean, you know, it and that was what was so odd about it. It's like the tone just kind of went from boring to ludicrous and back again.
Well, it doesn't help too that we are cross-cutting between at least three different stories throughout most of this movie, because we've got the Stephen Keats and the other lady, the Tricia Sambara. We've got that storyline going on. We've got Cindy Pickett as Liv Tyler. That's a totally different person. But it took me almost the entire length of the movie to realize that she is the ex-wife or soon to be ex-wife of Baxter Mapes. Yeah, sure. And she's this hardcore ecologist, and she's kind of relaying information from Africa, I suppose, to Mapes about this white ape that has been captured. And then there's the guy who doesn't necessarily capture the ape, but he picks up the ape. Another great name, Aubrey Range, played by Derek Partridge. And he entertains the natives with, what's that? Frosty the Snowman, the Rankin and Bass stop motion version of Frosty the Snowman. I was so happy about that before he takes the leader of the natives behind a car and just shoots the guy dead.
It's so great because the natives are watching this and they're all looking at each other horrified.
Yes.
It's like some moment where they're all like, oh, this is great. I love it. Rankin and Bass, it transcends language and culture. Yeah. Everyone loves a talking snowman. No, these people are horrified, baffled, confused, and repelled. One person even just like sort of swipes their hand in the air like, ugh, enough, and gets up and walks away. And I believe, was that the guy who then was summarily murdered?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey,
he didn't like Frosty.
So
not a fan. Not a Frosty fan. This is without a doubt, I think, for me, the worst thing we have watched this entire show.
Agreed.
It is the worst quality That's for sure. It's one of the worst quality things I've ever seen for any podcast I've ever been on.
You didn't like the Dutch subtitles on this VHS tape?
Dutch burned in subtitles from a VHS tape found in a gutter somewhere, because it looks like either a Peter Hyams film or a VHS copy of a movie taped off of someone's TV in the fucking... I don't even know where or how this exists. I would love to know how this version, this copy we watched, exists, because you can't find it anywhere other than pretty much YouTube.
I know Criterion has not put this out yet, which I don't understand. Or even, I mean, to not joke around, even just the Warner Archives, because that's how you get a lot of these now. That's how we got Bermuda Depths.
Right.
Via that. And I think, well, Bushido Blade had a pretty good release. You can find that one pretty easily. But then Last Dinosaur, I think, is another Burn on Demand or whatever they call it. So, but this one, no, can't get anywhere near this other than that weird YouTube copy that was ripped off of the Dutch VHS.
And you know, look, that doesn't help my ability to enjoy this movie. It actually hinders it. But I think, to your point already, Mike, it really is a woefully derivative product of things much better. I mean, from King Kong to Jaws,
oh boy,
to all kinds of things in between. This is just bizarre and pedantic in a lot of ways. It just feels just like in a lot of ways, the movie feels like a waste of time. Like, you know,
well, so you had, you know, you've got the Jack Palance story, which is the guy who is a hunter who has experienced a tragedy and will never hunt again.
A tragedy is a fucking mild way of putting it.
Oh, my God.
Friend.
Oh,
a tragedy, Richard. A tragedy.
Well, okay. He tells a story about how, you know, he's a hunter. He and his wife have a child, a young son who's 8 years old. He's with them on safari. And during the night, he hears noises, goes out of the tent, and literally sees an alligator with his son in its mouth, swimming out to sea. And so he raises his gun to... I guess the idea is, of course, to kill the alligator and maybe
that's what you assume.
But but whether he intended this or not, he hits his son. And
I think he killed his son to put him out of his misery.
It's like a very From Dusk Till Dawn, like kill me, like, you know, zombie thing. I think he killed it. I read the scene as he killed his son to prevent his suffering.
That's how I read it too, but I wasn't sure if I was reading it right. So, you know, Jack Palance delivers, you know, to say it's an overwrought performance is, you know,
a massive
understatement. Whoa. 1 hour and 8 minutes in, if you're looking to jump to this scene, which may be one of the few redeeming scenes in this film, 1 hour, 8 minutes in. How do I know that? Because Mike sent that to us and I was like, something bad's happening here. And then, boy, when he was telling that story, I was like, oh no.
I just kept waiting. I'm like, I wonder what horrible, surprising, offensive, hilarious, you know, what we found out.
It was kind of all of those things rolled into one.
The great part, though, is the line, you know, as soon as he walks off screen, the next line that is spoken is so perfect, because it's the guy listening says to the other guy listening, that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Ladies and gentlemen, the audience standing.
And Stephen Keats is like, yeah. And he sort of says it like, I've heard this story a number of times.
How many times have you heard the fucking alligator story?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This again. Come on, Mark. Do you have to tell us this story again?
You know, first drink, you're fine. Second drink, no problem. He hits his third drink, you're hearing the alligator story.
Whether you've heard it or not, and I shot him. I shot my son. Oh my God. Just,
oh boy.
Oh, overacted. Just such a fucking mess. Just a mess.
And then you have to question, because he was not in that much of the movie. And he did. I mean, look, that story had a conclusion. But of all this, it's like, okay, so you've got that. Then you've got, I guess, just the story of the bad guy and his relationship, his sort of unseemly relationship with Jack Palance's wife. And that adds a little, you know, something, I guess. And then the other thing is just, I guess we're just kind of following Stephen Keats's love life to find out which blonde he ends up with, the dubbed one or the one who I actually thought was pretty good. I'm sort of like, why wasn't she in a few movies? Yeah. The other blonde. There were three blondes in this.
Three non-blondes, one might even say.
I mean, she had kind of a Meg Ryan kind of vibe to her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cindy, do you know who she is? She's Ferris Bueller's mom.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
That's where I know her from the most.
This is a prequel to Ferris Bueller.
Oh, is that? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought you meant.
I can see that. She was also, of course, in Son-in-Law and, gosh, what else? Deep Star 6, I want to say. I looked her up last night. But as soon as I saw Ferris Bueller's, I was like, oh, yeah, I can totally see her from that role. And that was only, what, 6 years later? I can't remember. Yeah, Ferris Bueller was 86. So this was pretty close to that.
I just want to point out Deep Star 6 is a good one.
Oh, boy, that movie.
Have you seen that? You must have seen that movie.
Oh, I go through phases where I watch all of the underwater exploitation films that were coming out in the 80s. So like that one, Leviathan.
Never seen that.
The Deep.
Never seen that one.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there was a whole string of them. And for whatever reason, I saw a bunch of them in the theater, which is funny because The Ivory Ape really fits into the a previous subgenre, which was like the apesploitation films where you've got, you know, Robot Monster and
King Kong versus the Mecha Kong or whatever the hell we watched, remember?
Or Bela Lugosi meets the Brooklyn Gorilla, or just all of these movies that have these ape costumes in here. And then, I mean, because this is, ladies and gentlemen, we've seen pretty good ape costumes by this time. Rick Baker is around, but you get this ape costume, and this is right out of like Tanya's Island. I mean, just that the mouth never moves ever. It is hilarious because this ape is supposed to be very emotive at times. And
it emotes with its nose,
moves.
Mike. It emotes with its nose. It goes, It's just like my wife mentioned terracotta face because its face looks fucking strange. Oh, it's like its so face weird. Is made out of like Play-Doh because it just like looks lumpy and it's like I don't know how you light it well. Yeah, again, our VHS copy may not be helping, but the lighting on the ape's face when they do the unnecessary close-ups, like my God.
Oh, and that's the thing. They are giving it close-ups. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
They're like, hey, come look at how good this is. It's like, no, this is like, not good.
Shoot that from over there.
Shoot it in the head and put it in a shallow grave.
Oh, please. God. Yeah. Do not get close to this thing.
For those of you who may not have seen the movie, picture a like a circus peanut that's been on the floor and picked up a lot of lint. And now give it arms and legs.
Right. Yeah. It's orange. It's fucking strange looking. It's how do you fuck up a monkey? Like, that's the question I've got here. Not how do you fuck a monkey? I don't have that fucking question. How do you fuck up a monkey costume? Is that not like the most off the rack of off the rack costumes one could get?
Well, that's the thing is almost all of them. You can see the eyes, but there's no facial movement. It's just a static face. And this is the exact same one.
Right. But yet they show close-ups of it. It's like they would never show close-ups. None of these other movies are showing close-ups of the static mouth ape.
Right.
But also, this movie cost $1.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Chris, this almost looks like they took the ape costume from King Kong versus Godzilla and just dyed it white.
Yeah. Also, a great band named Richard Haddam and the Static Mouthed Apes.
I'd go to that show.
I would watch the shit out of that. The Static Mouth Apes. I love, you know, Mike, I was looking through some old culture casts over the vacation I just took. And then I remembered Kong Skull Island came out in 2017.
Wow.
Right. That makes me feel old. But I was thinking about that movie and how much I really liked that movie.
Yeah.
And how much I really didn't like this one.
Yeah, Skull Island was great. And then the very next one I was so excited about was borderline unwatchable.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
We're talking about Kong versus Godzilla?
Yeah.
No, you're in the wrong. It was good.
I don't know why. Like, it was even as I was watching it, I'm like, why am I so not into this?
Yeah.
I actually like usually look, I mean, anyone who's heard me for 5 minutes, you know, I mean, I just, you know, super analyze everything, but I was having trouble figuring out why I could not hook into King Kong versus Godzilla. I was actually weirdly more involved in this because there is that sort of weird, you know, just sort of, you know, gruesome interest of like, what are they going to do next? What could possibly be on the minds of the filmmakers next?
Ah, good question.
God. I mean, there's so many questions. Like you could even say, did Stephen Keats at a certain point think, if I make my performance uncuttable, like literally, if I behave in such a way that you almost can't edit scenes together, will they refuse to ever release this? Like, at a certain point, did he decide, oh, this was a big mistake? Like, I did one of these, but now I'm doing two of these. Was this one made after the other one, I think?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember one of the ones that we watched. I want to say it might have been Bushido Blade was shot at one time and then released at a different time. But yeah, this one was a TV movie from 1980. And Last Dinosaur, I want to say 78.
Yeah, it felt like Stephen Keats was sort of like, I'm just going to do what I want. I'm going to try to be funny. I'm going to try to be charming. I'm just going to make this into a romantic comedy. And I'm not going to worry about the integrity of the movie. The scenes that I'm in, I'm whacked out. I'm arguing with some hot chick, or I'm making out with a hot chick, or I'm saying funny lines to a hot chick. And that's all I'm doing.
I mean, I know you didn't enjoy this one, Chris, but my God, did I have fun.
Fun. It's not that I didn't enjoy it. It's just, it's not a good movie.
No,
like it's,
no.
It's what I think my issue kind of, it stems from something else. Last Dinosaur and Bermuda Depths were entertainingly bad. This one verged not. And again, I think there's obviously some just kind of presentation issues that go along with that, mm-hmm. which I think really hurts this movie. But again, that's why we talk about so much about making sure that things do get fucking released and things are available, because yeah, YouTube is not a good, I mean, YouTube's, here's the problem. I couldn't even suggest someone watch this because the quality copy is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's,
even if we loved it.
Right. Even if this was the best movie I'd ever seen, if the only option is watching it on YouTube with a Dutch burned in copy, like that's just a problem. But outside of that, I guess I wonder, when you talk about this kind of trio of live action movies, and I'm leaving Bushido Blade out, but Bermuda Depths, Last Dinosaur, and this, I think we would all agree are tonally consistent in a lot of ways. And they're talking about the same things. And they're almost, especially with this and Last Dinosaur, very similar movies.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what was their thinking like in the end of the 70s, going into the 80s, because the movie comes out in 80. Is there a push for this? Is this popular? Was this the weakest of the three? And that's why it came out the latest? Because that's what it feels like. It feels like this was the decision that was made, like you said, Richard, to just be like, if this one doesn't come out, fine. But you know what? Let's push it to the end.
Yeah, I think it was a deal where, like, if you could line up Richard Boone or Anthony Perkins, like the Sins of Dorian Gray,
right,
or Jack Palance for this one, if you could get just a name to show up and do a few days, and then you could get a theatrical release overseas for sure. And they had some clause in their, if you'll pardon the pun, a clause in their deal with ABC. It's like, mother effers, if you want the Christmas specials, then you're going to air The Ivory Ape and Bermuda Depths. Just pick your least favorite night of the year and put it on. And they did. I mean, this was in April of 1980. This was on ABC.
Yeah.
So maybe that was part of the deal. And it's like, I mean, if we can say that, because there's always this thing, if it airs on American television, that gives it almost like a legal contractual advantage that allows it to be released theatrically overseas. And they can say, this is an American, you know, hit movie, blah, blah, blah. They can sell it and make some, I mean, How much could they have spent? They had to make their money back on this.
Oh, God, yeah. I know it's easy for people to say this, very easy, but I will say it again because I very much feel this. This feels like it would be perfect for classic MST3K.
Yep.
There were so many times where things were going on screen where I'm just calling them out in my living room and just laughing my ass off. And I'm like, if somebody with a lot more talent had access to this film and could write better jokes than I could, I think it would be an amazing episode.
I agree. I would say almost more so than anything else we've watched, this one lends itself even more so to being kind of sent up because it is just so fucking strange. Mm-hmm. It's the setting is strange. The three stories going at once is strange.
Well, it's all shot in Bermuda. Right. So we've got again, that whole thing. Yeah. Was it Rankin? I think was just like, once they shot Bermuda Depths, he was just like, I'm going to live here for the rest of my life.
Pretty so much.
Here we go. Let's do set it this here.
For Arthur.
It had to be non-union, you know?
It's like, God, okay, yeah.
You know,
bunch of fucking dudes out in the jungle with cameras. Yeah. Yeah. Do it for Arthur. Remember, work 18 hours, Richard. Do it for Arthur.
What's Arthur going to do for you? That's
fucking sit on his plantation in Bermuda, fucking off and eating pineapples. I don't know. This feels like these movies are either this is what they always wanted to make. They always wanted to make monster movies, or they're just like, we've got these Japanese filmmakers we work with. And, you know, we got American actors. So can we, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That's all right. This is. It's either one of the two. And I think it's probably the latter.
Yeah. Yeah. This was, I mean, again, you know, not unwatchable, but as close as humanly possible.
When they spend all this time, it's basically the Mrs. Kittner has offered a reward for the shark moment.
Right.
And you get all of the guys going out in the bush and looking for the white ape, the ivory ape. And rather than bringing back a tiger shark, they fucking kill a cow. I was laughing my ass off.
That was fucking amazing. It's just a cow. How did you? All right.
How did you mistake a cow for the ivory ape?
They're both white. They're both white skinned. Well,
Did you notice that when the one guy has to go down, I think he says, like, do I go up in the spooky attic or do I get to go down into the spooky tunnel? And he ends up getting to go in the spooky tunnel. Then it's a white cat that scares him down there. And then later on, somebody's in, I think it's a barn, and there's a white pigeon. I'm like, oh, all of these animals are white. Oh, very symbolic here, Tom.
That was a great moment where the actor, you know, after they cut away from the bird, he does an exaggerated ha.
Right.
Jokes on me. I got scared, but that was just a bird, which totally tells you he will be dead in 90 seconds.
I was waiting. I could not wait for the guy who was picking on the ivory ape in the cage. I'm just like, this guy's going to die a great death. And then when the ivory ape grabs his ass and rips the ass out of his pants.
Hey, that ivory ape shows no mercy.
No.
I thought towards the end of the movie, it looked like the ivory ape had killed Stephen Keats. Anyone else notice that? Where it like looked like the ivory ape like grabbed him by the face. I was like, there he goes. But then he survived.
Did the ivory ape kill that kid in the car? People listening at home, there's a car accident and the ivory ape comes up to the car and there's a kid in the car. And I thought that he reaches into the car and like is patting the kid, but then later on it's like, oh, and there's a kid, and that's really the personal moment for the Jack Palance character. Like, oh, there was a child involved.
They mentioned that they scared the ape off from taking the kid, I think is what they said.
All right.
They separated the kid because I thought for sure it was gonna come down to the ape holding the kid.
That's what I thought.
Right. And Palance was going to be like, oh God, not again, please. Oh God.
Yeah.
Turns the gun on himself. Can't do it.
this whole movie climaxes at a church, which is kind of bizarre. Climaxes there, and it's almost like this reverse sniper, reverse JFK type situation, because it's Palance and all of these people down on the ground, and Palance has this bead on the ape up in this bell tower, and he's looking up there, and then there's like, he starts having like weird psychic flashbacks looking through the scope of his rifle. And that eventually he notices that something up there. And I thought the something up there was, oh, he's got the little kid with him. So,
right. Yeah.
All right.
And then someone runs up, right. Then he runs up to somebody else and goes, no, don't do it. Don't take the shot. Don't shoot. And then the guy sort of looks over at him, turns back and shoots.
Just like the killer.
God.
Takes place at a church. There's a gun. There's a shootout. Just like that movie we watched earlier this year, Mike.
It's exactly like it. It's shot exactly. Well, there's even the white bird in there.
Yeah. See what I mean? I'm drawing all sorts of conclusions that definitely shouldn't be drawn between this and a better movie.
He just jumped to conclusions.
Yeah. I do appreciate that they were like, well, we have to end it in like an elevated tower again, because that's like the whole monkey story thing.
Oh, yeah. You know, all very Kong. I mean, when they take the ape to Bermuda, I was just like, oh, boy, I'm surprised they haven't put it up on display and have big shining lights on it.
Right. I can't help but feel like the end of the movie is a little bit of a cop out, though. They just shoot the monkey. Like, God damn it. Why are we always killing these goddamn the monkeys? And then of course, oh, it's just misunderstood. No shit, it was misunderstood. It's a wild fucking animal. Like,
what's so great is that they have the thing, and then suddenly there's this obviously a black furred little ape, and then I'm watching, going, wait, I'm a little confused. I think I know what's happening, but I'm not sure. And then the two characters have a long conversation explaining it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Like, they're by the way. I guess
it turns out that she was pregnant the whole time, right? And she came here to give birth to the baby that we saw just now that's right over there. And it's tragic because it was a misunderstanding. And I'm like, okay, well, at least they're explaining it.
Well, it takes forever. And then it also takes forever for them to leave that belfry, because there's like these winding stairs. And first you get to see Cindy Pickett go down the stairs, and she stops and looks because the ape is there in the foreground and she's in the mid ground. And then Stephen Keats does the same thing, and he stops, and then he has to have like his last lines kind of thing. And then he goes down. I'm just like, this end scene is taking forever. How are they allowing this editing to not happen? This is all one take that is happening here.
And correct me if I'm wrong, do we get anything tied up with Jack Palance's character? Is he just fucks right off?
He tells them, I didn't order the shot. And I think that's his redemption, is that he gets to tell them, I didn't order the shot. And then they walk off with the little gorilla baby, like they're going to adopt it or something.
Yeah, Jack Palance's final line was, I told Arthur he had me for 2 days.
Exactly. See ya.
And this is our gay love child. You don't want a situation on your hands. I just think of a baby gorilla and two other people. I'm sorry.
Oh boy.
I wish they had just decided to raise it on their own.
Right.
Just like, you know what? Well, it's like, look, I like
Amy, you. Good gorilla.
Bad gorilla, go away. Ugly gorilla, ugly, go away. Not that, Richard. Jesus Christ. That wasn't in Congo. Or maybe this ain't Congo triple X porn parody.
Yeah, I don't know which one you saw.
Congo 2. God. I would have, I wish we had watched Congo, because Congo is a fun ape movie. Congo is a really fun movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it recently.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I used to have all of the collector's trading cards, because there was a great collector's card of Bruce Campbell where he was like holding up something and looking at it, and it was. Had his character's name underneath it.
I always forget Bruce Campbell's in like the first 10 minutes of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
You need to watch that movie, Richard. Have you never seen it?
Never seen it. I read the book when it first came out. And because I was like in eighth grade or something. And I'm like, this is the greatest piece of literature I've ever read.
I have never read the book, but the movie's insane. The movie is like, if what if Jurassic Park had monkeys? Like dumb monkey shit. Like it's just monkeys getting lasered in half, monkeys talking. Like,
and then it's strange too, because Crichton then went in, like, one of his last movies or books was Next, which was another monkey living with people type of thing.
Yeah, it was like DNA, monkey DNA or something.
Right. Dino DNA.
A dinosaur. Mike, hey, and Westworld's coming back today. Your favorite show, Mike. That's Michael Crichton all the way. Yeah. I will tell you, I do like monkey movies a lot. You know, Congo, King Kong, and everything. I appreciate what they were going for with this movie, but the ivory ape is not a ape of note. Noteworthy apes, it is not.
I guess we would have to say skip this one.
It's hard to find it. That's the problem. Like, that's just the big problem. You'll have trouble
skipping this one. It would be actually very, very difficult and time-consuming to not skip it.
If you can watch The Last Dinosaur instead, then do it. But if your only available movie is this, definitely, for me, it's a definite watch because I had so much fun. Though I do have in my notes at one point, this movie is fucking boring. But for the most part...
What the fuck?
That's like, there's a boring movie, actually. It's like, you know, I'm going to go check the spooky house or I'm going to go check the spooky tunnel. Around that point, my notes are, this movie is boring as shit. And then the next note is a cow? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
The cow thing was great.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, these 90-minute movies are the longest movies of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because any movie that is 90 minutes long is 90 minutes long because something didn't go right. And so much had to be cut out that was just like literally unwatchable that it becomes very difficult to structure and pace a movie that actually clips along at 90 minutes. So at 90 minutes, this felt like half my adult life.
Well, and again, like I was mentioning, it's just disjointed. It just feels narratively disjointed, which that's what happens when, I don't know. I don't want to say the people who are working on this don't know what they're doing, but I think they're better suited for other things. Because the other Rankin and Bass stuff we've watched for the most part has been pretty good. This is one of, honestly, what's funny, Richard, and you kind of, you know, this is the first time you haven't brought it up in a long time where you're like, hey, you know, I'm sick and tired of this fucking show. I want it to end. I think we could agree for the most part, most of the things we've watched for this show have been pretty good. We haven't watched like Dreck for the most part. I think we've watched more or less quality entertainment from Rankin and Bass.
Well, I mean, we're coming at it from a certain angle of like, wait, what is this stuff?
Well, so this like, stuff for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, I mean, that's the thing with all of your options today. It would be hard to say, skip a lot of other movies and watch, you know, the Bermuda Depths or something. I mean, again, unless you just got some weird obsession with cheap 70s movies starring, you know, Burl Ives or, you know, whoever. But even from that point of view, it's like, oh, okay, there are things to recommend these movies. And clearly there was, you know, somebody was excited about doing them. They're not crass. It's not, and they're not exploitative. It's not like, oh, they made a movie with, it was just all topless women. Okay, asshole. Clearly you were, you know, going for the drive-in crowd and you were being exploitative and trying to make a buck. It was like, no, they were trying to do something. They were trying.
Right. And again, that's, you know, for me, that's kind of, I don't know what the hell they were going for. I think they were trying to make an apesploitation movie, like you said, Mike. I mean, there's lots of things that this is very similar to. And success is kind of in the eye of the beholder. So, Miz, you know, more Jack Palance is what I would have preferred. Just waxing poetically about having to murder. We have come so far from Rankin and Bass, and now we're talking about child murder.
I know, right?
If any one of us had said get to child murder in your Rankin and Bass podcast, I'm not even fucking like a character admitting to murdering a child in a Rankin and Bass film.
His own child.
His own child. Yeah.
From Rudolph to this, what is
happening? It was his fucking Jaws moment. Black eyes. They could dull his eyes. It's that moment. It's that moment just with Jack Palance. What are we talking about next time, Mike?
So next time we're going to talk about the last of these live action films, which is called Marco, as in Marco Polo. I was waiting for somebody to say Polo.
Oh.
And that came out in 1973, starring Desi Arnaz Jr. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, until
it's then. It's a musical, Mike. You didn't mention it's a musical, baby.
Can't wait.
You think the music's going to be good or garbage? You think it's actually going to be good?
This one looks like it's going to be tough to find, because right now I'm seeing a DVD on Amazon that is $40, and I don't want to bite the bullet, guys. So maybe we can find this on YouTube.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good. Maybe it's on Prime Video. They have all sorts of random shit, don't they?
Oh, and it's always very high quality, too.
Yeah. I mean, hey, just like YouTube. I mean, when you watch movies on YouTube, you never know what you're going to get. Could have Dutch burned in subtitles. God.
Yeah. Until then, though, I want to thank my co-hosts, Chris and Richard. So, Richard, what's happening with you, sir?
I am deep in the middle of producing season 4 of Titans on HBO Max. We're going to premiere in August. I think it's the last week of August. We're getting ready to film the season finale. So there's some good stuff coming.
Cool. And Chris, what's happening at the Culture Cast and with the rest of your shows?
Over the Culture Cast, talking about Rutger Hauer movies. So that's a thing. If you're into that, cool. If not, I don't know, go somewhere else. Go to Mike's show, The Projection Booth. That's a better show anyways. Let's just keep the candor open and honest, folks. You want something good? Go listen to his show. You want to listen to some chuckle fucks yokel on about movies? Come on down to the Culture Cast and listen, because you know what you're going to get. Richard Haddam's there, and I'm not steamrolling him on that show.
I get my say on that show. You know, between you and me and Colin, I'm doing fine.
What about you, Mike? What's going on over at your show that people actually listen to?
Well, it's a whole lot of different things going this month. We've got The Conformist, The Night Porter, Wise Blood, Black Lizard. And right in the middle of that, we're talking about the Gumball Rally and the Cannonball Run with you, Chris, and with Father Malone, our co-host on the, well, Midnight Viewing, Dreams for Sale. And he usually stops by the Culture Cast. So
it's true.
It'll be a fun time.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Until then, I want to thank everyone for listening. Thanks to the two people that have given us reviews over on iTunes. Thanks to the Great Octopus for our theme song. And once again, thanks to you guys. Richard, I hope we didn't steamroll you too bad this episode.
No, I felt pretty good. I feel like my voice was heard. But hey, folks out there, keep those cards and letters coming. We want to know who you think is talking too much, who you think is talking not enough, and who you think is talking just right.